At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello. Out there. I'm pretty careful not to argue around my kids, even if I'm right. I'll concede I may not be right, just to keep voices from raising, dishes from breaking. But once the kids are gone, look out. Payback, like my lady, is a bitch. And it's not like that. You know, I'm joking around. For us, it's quite rare for me to beat the living shit. No. For us, it's quite rare to argue in front of the kids. It's one of those things that you remember how it felt to experience yourself, so you don't do it. I feel like many of us forget what it's like to be a child. I hear people talk about how lucky their kids are, how easy they have it. And hey, it's not easy being small. I'm in a realm where I'm around small people still, and I can see it clearly in these moments. I'll forget at some point in time, but I know right now, being around my five-year-old, that it's not easy being small. He tells me so. It's not easy being completely dependent on big people to survive. You're always asking permission, for one. Also, there are consequences looming for the handling of each and every situation you face as a little guy or girl. You rarely know what you're going to eat, and if you don't like it, you're probably in trouble. There are hundreds of examples, but just think about that. Imagine every meal going forward you're given is a mystery. And once it's placed before your face, you have to eat it, or you're in trouble. Even prisoners can throw their food out without getting reprimanded, then locked down. But not kids. We completely forget that as adults, we can quit. We can break up. We can leave. Kids can't. Age 10 or so and below, I'd say it's pretty hard for a kid to escape their reality. So when the people they rely on fail to show up with the food, the shelter, the safety, it's a major crisis for little ones. And when the voices begin to raise in the house, it's a siren of instability. Every shout, scream, slap creates an incredible fear in a child. Is it all going to fall apart? And if it does, what is going to happen to me? Welcome to Dark Topic. I'm your host, Jack Luna. This is a true crime happening. I hope she's happy. Kalamazoo, Michigan, June 17th, 2013, 3 p.m. 42-year-old John Kovach finishes work at Kalamazoo Industries, a factory that manufactures high-quality industrial abrasive chop saws, abrasive miter saws, belt sanders, belt grinders, disc sanders, dust collectors, high-speed non-ferrous chop saws, shit like that, John would tell you. On this mid-June afternoon, he's happy to be picking his boys up from school, 10-year-old Jason and 8-year-old Bradley. John is very involved with his kids. Sports, vacations, quality time, these young men are what keeps his life filled with purpose and joy. The same, unfortunately, can't be said about his relationship with their mother, 39-year-old Nancy Kovach. They've been married a decade since their first child was born, but at this point, it feels like an eternity. John stops at the liquor store to pick up some necessary supplies. It's the only thing that gets him through these days, and he's not alone. Nancy will share the nightly bottle with him. Once she gets home around 5 p.m. from her administrative job at the hospice center. Everything collected, the booze, the kids, John Kovach heads home to the only place he's ever known, down East Main Street in Kalamazoo's Comstock Township, Michigan. His mom and dad live down here, close to town center and their church. The road leads a little ways into nature. From downtown, trees shroud the short journey past homes spaced by overgrowth, set back from the road, giving the not-quite-rural area a sense that it in fact is rural. You know the place. There's the downtown, a small downtown, within Michigan, all right? And then within Kalamazoo, a smaller area, and then within that Kalamazoo area, the smallest area, Comstock Township. And then there's like a church and a couple of restaurants in this downtown. And then you go down this lane. It's a well-paved area. I've gone down it through Google Streets or whatever the fuck. And you drive away from the church and a few restaurants out into, it looks like the country, but it's not. It's just overgrowth of trees and a few houses down there, maybe about 12. John loves it back here. He loves his tired blue farmhouse style abode he and Nancy managed to buy just a few doors down from his childhood home. Everything about the Kovaches seems to be stably set in place. It's a good life they're living, from all appearances. But once Nancy, a lively, loving mother known as a real spark by friends and family alike, gets home, and the drinking hours wear on, the late evening aura of this whole sunny scene begins to brood and blacken. The booze helps loosen them up, makes each evening magic for a spell, lots of chatter, sharing the daily events, making quick plans for the future they are around the dinner table and out there watching television, dad pouring drinks for mom saying thank you to dad, and then dad eventually having a bit of a problem with something, it seems, and heading off to the bathroom, and then to the bedroom. When he comes back out of the bedroom, after turning on his music and saying, hey, Mom, you want to come back here and bang? Which is, you know, the way it is. It's an odd situation between parents when the kids get to be 10, 8 years old. You kind of take the moments when you can, especially when you're working all day. It's like, is it happening now with a few drinks in us? Can we slide this aside? But in this interaction, Mom says something shitty, and soon Dad is back in the bedroom with the door closed now, drinking alone while listening to music that they can hear bumping through the walls. Mom continues watching television with the kids. They're close, the boys and their mother. The boys and their dad are close as well, but something is wrong with the marriage, clearly. They pick on each other, John and Nancy. There's resentment that spills out as the booze spills in. John keeps popping out. Nancy keeps popping off. They have like a okay conversation at times, and the kids look up like, oh, Mom and Dad love each other. And then it fucking degrades into somebody insulting the other one, and they split apart. The kids are like, oh, it's a little tense in here now. And it's really none of our business what the resentment is about. It's really none of our business how the kids feel, how Mom feels, how Dad feels. That's the family in this little, you know, place, in this time. It's between them. But what is our business is when John, later on, around 8:30, decides it's time to clear the air and comes rumbling out of the room while the kids and Mom are watching, I don't know, some fucking TV show. What would they be watching in 2013? I guess Orange is the New Black, you know? They're watching TV with each other. And John comes rumbling out, wanting to give Nancy a piece of his mind based on what she had said to him last time over their clinking drinks over the back of the couch while the kids pretended to not sense that things were starting to go south. And this happens a few times a month, where the two seem so sick of each other that they must blow off the steam, using alcohol for fuel, and it gets messy, there's no stopping until there's violence. Even though it appears on the outside, I mean, they have their parents and themselves being regular churchgoers to this place, to this church down the street. To everybody on the outside, John's a hardworking man, Nancy's a hardworking woman, the kids are 8 and 10, and they seem to, you know, be taken, well, they don't seem to, they definitely are taken out to sporting events and activities, and they seem happy when their parents are happy, because parents are always happy in public. But behind closed doors, things degrade to this point. I see a few times a month, but it's got to be at least once a week, maybe twice. And there's no stopping when it degrades to the worst part of its degradation until there's violence from both. There's slaps, drinks thrown, dishes smashed. I think when, and I'm going to sound like I'm sticking up for John, and I don't mean to at all here, but she's slapping him. He's slapping her. And most people are like, error, he can't slap her. But like, bam, bam, she's like a really an aggressor in a lot of this type of thing, which doesn't make it right for him to hit her back. But I mean, this is happening on both sides. It doesn't come down to him just overlording on her and holding her by the throat while the kids are like, dad, let her go. It's more like she smacks him back. She smacks him first. He smacks her. She says, how fucking dare you? And he retreats to the bedroom. This is kind of the routine. A dish might get smashed. He might punch a hole in the wall. But he'll go back into the bedroom and listen to music. You know, the two have had this ritual going on since their early 20s, before the kids, even. In late March, just a few months before the incident that we're speaking of here, Nancy had posted on her Facebook, quote, I'm proudly married to my best friend, end quote. One of those typical public declarations about the stability of a personal relationship that exposes it as shaky. Like, is it good? Or just going good right now following an argument, you know, while your kids are fucking crying in bed and you two are making up at 2 a.m. and banging on the couch. Is that why it's good? Is it the next morning when you've kissed him goodbye and you know he checks your Facebook every fucking 5 minutes because he's worried that you're interacting with other men, that you have to send a bat signal out to him that everything's okay? Is that, like, why the fuck do you do those messages? Tell him yourself that you're proudly married to him and he's your best friend. Tell him that. Tell him that. Why are you telling us that? That always throws me for a fucking loop. Anytime I've had things going good with me and my girl, obviously personally, it's just good between me and my girl or me and my friends. I don't feel the need to go afterwards and tell everybody it's going good because that would project the idea that it's almost always bad and I'm celebrating a good moment. You get where I'm coming from. I know you do. Nobody knows just how bad things have gotten outside of the kids and their grandparents. They know, who live a few doors down, how bad things have gotten by 2013 in the summer here. On the many late evenings where the couple get too drunk, too mean with one another, the kids slowly begin making their way to the front door. I can relate to this. I remember being a kid and hearing the arguments and like slowly shuffling towards the front door. It's almost time to run for help, you know. And these kids, they put their shoes on and they wait for the first slap, the first broken dish. Then they'll go running to their grandparents' home, where maybe their father had fled as a child himself to another home. Maybe this is systemic. It's become routine by this late June evening of 2013 for the kids to go running for help when their mom and dad start getting down. On this night, when dad comes back out of the bedroom, CCR running through the jungle behind him, there's a look in his eyes darker than it's ever been. It's around 9 p.m. They've had this argument over the couch. John Kovac, he's clearly drunk, but there's a meaningness in him this night. The kids, this is from the kids' perspective. They're telling this in court later. His usually bald head is stubbled, like his cheeks that surround a goatee. He's kind of let himself go in the last couple of days. Something's wrong with dad. His goatee, it looks devilish tonight. Nancy doesn't seem to notice, but the kids, they truly do. Their father is a ghoulish entity tonight, smacking his lips, looking through the boys as they say, "No, Dad, come on, please, stop being mean to Mom." Looking through them to their mother, who struggles to dump a package of hot dogs into a pot of boiling water, saying, "Oh, are you going to feed them? I'll fucking feed them then. It's closing in at 9 p.m. She's just making the boys something now, he thinks. Like, fuck you, lady. He begins berating his wife. "You going to give them boiled hot dogs? Christ, I work all day." "Oh, I know you work all day. I was an administrator at a hospice center. Give me a fucking break. I'm out there making bandsaws. You're going to give these kids with the money that we make some boiled hot dogs at 9 p.m. And he's on top of her, you know, and the kids are between them and she's giving back. And the kids are looking back at Mom and saying, "Please, Mom, please, come on, plunk." You know, and he grabs your hair and he smacks you when you fucking start going too far like this. Both, they're slurring insults at each other over the kids until John comes up to Nancy, says, "I want a fucking divorce," grabs her by the hair on either side of her head and shouts into her face to shut the fuck up. "I want a divorce, bitch." That's what he does. And he shoves her back. And that's no bueno. That's no good, John. And Nancy, she's fucking irate at this. And the kids, they're forgotten in these moments when it's one-on-one like this. And she thinks he's a pussy. And he thinks that she thinks he's a pussy. And these arguments, like, there are arguments between people where there's a clear aggressor and a clear victim. Okay, I need to say this, in domestics, where it's just like, "Oh my God, please, guy, like, you are disgusting. You're just like putting your heel on the neck of this family." But in this situation, Nancy is very aggressive too. And it never goes so far as for him to beat the living shit out of her. He's never done that. So him grabbing her by the hair, it's just like opening the door. It's her turn now. And she just begins berating him. And the kids know this. They're like, "Oh my God, Dad went that far. She's going to go even further." And they're moving towards the door. And when Nancy demands John give her keys, and she yells at the kids, "No, you don't leave. You don't leave tonight. I'm leaving. I'm leaving, kids." This episode is brought to you by IQ Bar, our exclusive snack and hydration sponsor here at Dark Topic. And we're so excited to announce they've teamed up with Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, on two special edition products, a salted caramel chip protein bar and a yuzu mango hydration mix drink. And I've been eating a whole hell of a lot of salted caramel chip protein bars. I don't get sick of them. That's one thing I'll say about those. It's a great treat and decent for you. As well as the yuzu mango hydration mixed drink. I mean, I'll have one before bed. I'll have one when I wake up in the morning. Something about it. I mean, really great flavor. And makes me feel like I came back to life after I chug one of those bad boys. IQ Bar's plant protein bars. They're mixed with clean, delicious ingredients that keep you physically and mentally fit. The salted caramel chip IQ Bar that I've just mentioned there, it has 12 grams of protein and only 1 gram of sugar. And it has brain-boosting nutrients in it, like lion's mane, adaptogen. The yuzu mango IQ mix is a refreshing zero sugar hydration mix that marries bold flavor and essential electrolytes for your body and lion's mane plus magnesium for your brain. Just mix with water for Michelin star taste and next level hydration. 10% of sales, I should mention, go to Chef Keller's nonprofit Mentor, which supports the next generation of aspiring U.S. chefs. With over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are fueling their busy lifestyles with IQ bars, brain boost. Clearly, I didn't drink my yuzu drink this morning. Brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. This is the snack that you should start stocking in your cupboards when you go to reach for that, you know, ice cream at night, that chocolate bar during the day. I'd suggest reach for an IQ bar. They sent me the salted caramel chip IQ bar, the yuzu mango mix, and I mean, again, I've been going back and forth on those, and I just can't believe that something so delicious could be so good for me. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% of all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, text DARK to 64,000. Text DARK to the number 64,000. That's DARK to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. Could this be your summer of discovery? Yeah, with Rosetta Stone it could be. Whether you're traveling abroad, planning a staycation, or just shaking up your routine, what better time to dive into a new language? With Rosetta Stone, you can turn downtime into meaningful progress. Rosetta Stone is a trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive method helps you naturally absorb and retain your new language on desktop or mobile, whenever and wherever it fits your summer schedule. I've been using it to try to learn Japanese, as I mentioned already multiple times. I mean, Rosetta Stone and I are good friends at this point, and I'm surprised how quickly you can pick things up in bite-sized lessons. And what I mean by that is, like, if you're planning on going somewhere or interacting with someone who has another language underneath their belt or a country that is required to speak that language wherever you are in certain situations, you can pick up bite-sized things to get you by. And I really like that about it. And it makes you feel like you are learning when you haven't developed the entire scope of it. At least you have a foot in the door with these bite-sized lessons and learning with their true accent feature. Rosetta Stone is the trusted language expert. It has 30 years of experience teaching people. I mean, there's millions of users and 25 languages to choose from, including Spanish, French, German, Japanese, and more. Rosetta Stone is a go-to tool for real language growth, and you can learn faster, retain longer. The big thing with Rosetta Stone for me is that you get this lifetime membership with them when you sign on, and you just never know when it's going to come in handy. Whatever trip comes up in the future, you can prepare yourself with this in your back pocket. So don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential right now. Dark Topic listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
She's leaving this time. And John, he's like, goes over to the counter. He's like, yeah, your fucking keys are right here, right by the boiling water of fucking hot dogs that you made for the kids at 9 p.m. I thought you fed them earlier, for Christ's sakes. He chucks her keys at her head, and she ducks and misses. And I'm starting to sound like I'm on John's side. I'm not. I'm just trying. Like, I can only envision the male side of this, right? So forgive me. And he storms back into the bedroom, where he grabs his handgun. It's a 45. It's no pussy. And he sticks the barrel in his mouth. And oh shit, Johnny, don't you think it'd be a little dramatic here, out here, you know, back here in the bedroom with Run Through the Jungle tapering off, stuffing a gun in your mouth as you know your wife's coming to run to see what's up, if you want to say something else, while the kids are crying and screaming at the front door? I mean, it's just hot dogs. I mean, I agree, boiling hot dogs is about the lowest meal a mother can muster. I get it, but you're going to murder yourself over it? That's the last straw? These fucking boiling hot dogs? I think there's something boiling beneath the surface, am I right? Can we talk about that? What's the actual problem here, Johnny? Think of the kids, John. Listen to them. They're crying, buddy. This is no good. They need you to pull it together. Fuck what your wife's saying. Fuck what your wife's doing. Fuck what you just instigated, you know, to set her off, probably purposefully, to justify the act that you're claiming that you're about to do to yourself in suicide. This is just immature people at the age of 39 and 42, John being 42, so immature with 10 and 8-year-old boys to be making every night about them and their problems. Why don't we sit down and watch a movie, make some popcorn, and ask the kids about their day and make them laugh and cuddle and send them off to their individual bedrooms and then fucking fuck. Not fuck, I hate that word. I do. Make love. Or even just sit there together with your arms around each other and talk about your day at the end of it. Drinks can be involved. They could absolutely be involved, but there's clearly so much underlying tension. They just hate each other. They hate being together. I hate this. God, I hate this. It happens all across the world, doesn't it? Where people, they think that because they've been together for a certain period of time that it's naturally going to be good. I've been with my wife for 10 years. Yeah? How much of that time have you spent getting to know her? I've been with my husband for 10 years. Yeah. How much of that time have you spent getting to know him? How much of that slow, weird, brooding time have you spent saying, why is this feeling like slow, brooding downtime? Why are we like this? Rather than waiting for a few drinks to get into you and then just displaying the most negative of it. Human nature, I guess. I guess we're not that evolved, are we? We're just a few steps above a monkey. Nancy, she comes into the gloomy bedroom where John has retreated to, and when she sees the state of her husband, slouched on the edge of the bed with a gun in his mouth, you know, have you ever seen the rain running down his face? She laughs at John. Like, come on, John, get real. You're too much of a coward to kill yourself. And the kids are in the background going, Mom, please, please leave him alone. The kids, 10 and 8 years old, Jason and Bradley, are saying, Mom, please, please leave him alone. Leave him alone. Leave him alone. Stop being mean to him. And she goes, you might kill me, John. Sure, I want to put that past you, but you'll never do it to yourself. Give me a fucking break, John. Get that gun in your mouth, bitch. Later, John Kovacs will say that he didn't think. He has heard his kids screaming. He has heard his wife fucking belittling him. And he just pulled the gun from his mouth, saw Nancy smirking, saw the kids in a haze behind her, pointing up, screaming, crying. And he fired right into her face. When she hit the floor, he felt better. Even though he just destroyed his life, ended hers, and for the time being, put these screaming, crying, desperate kids who just want a mom and a dad, who are a mom and a dad, to be a fucking mom and a dad. He put these kids in limbo. It felt good for John. He'd say later, it felt good to shut her up once and for all. And the boys come running into him. They're grabbing at his leg, but at the same time pushing off. They're yelling at him. They're crying. They're asking why. They're hugging him because they're the only person. He's the only person that they have. He's an anchor now. He's it. And then they're pushing off and saying, Dad. And they're looking at Mom, and she's dead on the floor, bleeding out of her fucking forehead. John collects his boys. And he walks them out of the house, down the driveway, then through the darkness, takes the walk with them that they've had to take, you know, every fucking 5 days for years to their grandparents' home to say that Mom and Dad are fighting. He takes that walk with them this time to his childhood home. And once the door opens to his childhood home, he collapses into his father's arms and tells him he did it. Dad, I told you, I'm going to fucking kill her. I shot her. I killed Nancy. And the boys, you know, they're hysterical. They're running around his legs saying, like, it's like a weird magnet going negative and positive. It's like the positive is, I want to be close to my dad. I have nobody else. And the negative is like, my dad just killed my mom. And they're shifting all around him. And it's at this point that John's father, Sherman, calls 911.
Yeah, it's kind of 911.
My son just shot his wife. Two houses to the south of me.
He shot his wife?
That's what I'm telling you.
Okay, and two houses to the east. How do you know this?
My sons were just here. What's the matter, son? What's the matter, son? What's the matter?
Right, what is your name, sir?
Okay, you gotta get here. My son just shot his wife.
Okay. Is she dead?
My son's here right now.
Okay, what house is his wife at?
Two houses east.
Okay, do you know the address?
No, I do not. No.
All right. Sherman, your name is Sherman, right?
Yes.
Sherman Kovac.
All right, and I'll step in here. You hear the kids in the background. That kills me, man. I don't need to relate to myself all the time. I really don't. But I will here. It's like that. I remember going and just saying to people, like, I don't, like, can you help? Can you help us? Like, in our home, my dad's killing my mom. And my brother's screaming. And they'd look at it onto the balcony and be like, it looks pretty dead over there. I'm like, yeah, it looks pretty fucking dead inside there probably right now. If you don't, I didn't think that as a child. But then it takes time for the cops to come and you go back down and there's nobody really assessing the situation. And your dad tries, for me, like your dad's coming at the front as the cops come in. He's looking at you like, what, you fucking called the cops? And your brother's crying and your mom is in the house and you don't know if she's dead or not. It's a horrific situation for these kids. And I want you to focus, I know you will regardless, but on the kids in the background as I continue playing this. And I'm sorry, it is really hard. It's really hard to hear these little boys and their world crumbling.
John? Are you heading out, John?
Come on.
Is he? Hello? Hello?
What's that?
Hello, Mr. Kovac?
Yes.
Is he heading outside now, sir?
The cops are driving.
Okay, sir.
All right. Oh, my God. You know, what that is for those kids, man, is I just want to say, they want to say goodbye to their dad because they know they're not going to see him anymore. And they're upset because he killed their mom. But they know that that's the last person that they have. He did that to those kids. To me, I mean, the murder's heinous. But the taking yourself away from your children. In that as well is the most... It's hard to say the most damaging, but it hurts. That hurts. You hear that little 8-year-old Bradley. Dad, I just want to say goodbye to my dad. And then you hear Jason saying, why'd you do it, Dad? And then you know that once his dad is taken away, and I know that he was holding Bradley as the cops took him. He had to put his son down. And then Jason, the 10-year-old, had to attend to his brother. I'm sorry. Jesus. But that wail, oh Christ, that wail from that little kid, his mom's dead. His dad killed her. And he still has a line. He can't decipher how he should feel, but he knows he loves his dad too. What, you're going to fucking take my dad, too? I just want to say bye to my dad. He just said bye to his mommies. It's tough, man. Ugh. You know, it's not even about my own experience. It's just thinking about my own kids doing that. If I hurt Charlie or Jack, you know, Jack saying, you know, why'd you do it, Dad? And then Charlie saying, can I say goodbye to my dad when I'm holding him? What'd you do, man? This is so fucking bad. Man, I didn't think that would happen at all. That's stupid. Horrendous. Real bad. Oh, fuck, it's bad. It's just tough to hear, you know? Those kids in the background. They tell them they miss them. They already know he's doomed. They say goodbye, you know? They likely have dreaded this day. It is something that they could imagine. They could have imagined. You know, they imagined it. They knew. And it was a possibility, is what I mean. And now the nightmare is reality. Dad killed Mom. And now Dad's going away. They have no parents. The boys, they'll be taken to their aunt's house. And she'll care for them going forward. Good Christ, get it together. She'll care for these boys going forward, as will the grandparents. And when John is taken into custody, he's heard in the back of the cruiser saying to himself, quote, "I hope she's happy." Hey, and that'll do it. That's a rough one. That is the first Dark Topic Plus episode I said I'd never share. The reason I'm sharing it now is because someone reached out to me and said that they were in an abusive relationship as the abuser, and that that episode helped them to stop being so abusive towards their woman and their kids and turned things around for them. So I just hope it helps. If you want to hear the full episode, you can always come over to Dark Topic Patreon or Apple Plus. I know I'm always plugging it. It's just, it's what I got. And I hope to be back here more often like a deadbeat dad. So thank you for listening. Eyes cocked, doors locked, stay paranoid. I don't care what you think about that. I think a lot of you will relate to it. If you don't relate to it, you might think I'm a pussy about it, or you just might feel sad about it. There's a lot more to that, obviously, for me, but it was important for me to share it after getting that message from a guy who pulled back after hearing it. So I hope maybe it helps more. All right. And also, I got some ads I needed to run on that. Let's be honest. No. Yeah. I'm not the best guy, but I'm not the worst guy either. Thank you.
Greetings, fellow lovers of the dark and macabre. Looking for more thrilling tales of true crime and suspense?
Then step aboard the Murder Coaster.
I'm Krista Carmen.
And I'm Matthew Brockmeyer.
And every week we bring you spine-chilling and disturbing true tales of murder and mayhem.
So strap in.
Keep your hands and feet inside the ride.
And prepare for a descent into the darkest realms of true crime.
On Murder Coaster Podcast.
Murder Coaster Podcast, available everywhere you get podcasts.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.